Friday. Today is August the 9th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to take a look out in the backyard and garden, talk about insect pests and trees today, primarily mimosa trees and honey locusts. The pest we're looking at primarily this time of year, mimosa webworms and the damage they can cause. We'll talk about the symptoms, what to look for, and possible treatment options after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to start off this Friday morning taking a look out in the backyard and garden, talking about mimosa webworms and burnt orange honey locusts. Now, what comes to mind when someone asks you what's happening to some of the honey locusts out there? Well, if it's a black locust tree or a honey locust, maybe they're asking about the swarming grasshoppers, or they're confused about cicadas with locusts. Of course, the question is clear, though, if they're buckeyes. Currently, the mimosa webworm nests are causing honey locusts to appear burnt orange in central parts of Ohio and moving this direction. Honey locust is considered an alternate host for this non-native moth in much of the U.S., but its primary host in Ohio are mimosa trees, although they can be somewhat wear in certain parts. Blazing black locusts are also beginning to appear along highways in various parts of Ohio. This culprit is the locust leaf miner. The leaf miner doesn't infest honey locust, and mimosa webworms don't infest black locusts. Now, locust leaf miner populations are on the rise. They also fall dramatically from year to year, and highly localized pockets have developed this season in Ohio, but that is something we'll talk more about probably in another week or so. Now, going back to the mimosa webworms, those caterpillars feed gregariously as skeletonizers with sticky webs spun over the foliage, and they only feed on leaflets enveloped by those silk nests. Attention is usually drawn to an infestation by clusters of sort of ornish-brown, torched-looking leaves and leaflets that are so tightly encased in the webbing, the foliage actually looks like it's almost melting. Now, so far, mimosa webworm populations appear to be highly localized. For example, some were reported around Hilliard, some others up by Van Wert County. So it just depends on where you're at and where, for whatever reason, they're at. Mimosa trees were first brought to the United States from Asia as ornamentals in the mid-1700s, and mimosa webworms were accidentally introduced from China in the 1940s. Now, contrary to some online references that claim the webworms were found on honey locust trees back in like 43, scientific papers described the webworm as a new pest of mimosas in the Washington, D.C. region. Mimosa webworms continue to be found on their namesake host. However, for a paper that was published back in 1947, it reported that non-native moths had developed a taste for honey locusts. This paper also provided a hint that all honey locust trees are not equal in the compound eyes of mimosa webworm moths. If we take a look, once mimosa webworms jump ship to utilize honey locusts, this moth used their newfound host to spread across much of the eastern and midwestern U.S., and the spread was aided by honey locusts, becoming that sort of go-to tree to replace American elms when Dutch elm disease went through. And that added more honey locusts all around the country. Now, mimosa webworms have at least three generations per season here in Ohio, with moth populations typically increasing in each generation, but the caterpillars of each generation don't wander forth to establish new nests. They actually stay and will build on additional to where they start. Research published in 1993 actually revealed that the caterpillars would spread a water-soluble chemical on that webbing that stimulates female moths to lay eggs. So the female typically lays a silverish white egg on the nest in which they developed, and new eggs are silverish white, and then they'll turn actually a coral red as they get older and closer to hatching. The overall result of females laying eggs on previous nests is that the first generation nests are expanded by the second and third caterpillars. This partially explains why the moths commonly fly below our radar until leaves start to turn brown as second and third generations actually start developing those nests. Stay tuned, we'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at crop.com. coverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to pick up where we left off talking about mimosa webworms. Now we want to really look at the impacts that they can cause to trees. They're generally just considered aesthetic as well as a nuisance pest on healthy established trees. Those torched leaves cemented together with that sticky substance appear on heavily infested trees, but oftentimes they can pull through. Unfortunately, a lot of folks will have honey locusts in the yard just because of the nice aesthetics to them and what they do for sort of the filtered shade and whatnot. They've been favored in a lot of different landscapes, and those small leaflets obviously will minimize what the cleanup is in the fall, but this webworm is one that likes to be in those and can cause problems in the landscape. The vast majority of damage actually occurs mid to late summer after established trees have acquired and stored enough carbohydrates through photosynthesis to support the next season's growth. So that's why we say healthy trees, typically it's not going to be a problem. But despite the appearance, the caterpillars really don't cause a lot of significant overall harm. The impact may be different, though, if it's newly planted trees, also if it's maybe ones that are stressed or struggling. So sometimes we'll see those maybe in towns between the sidewalk and the street where it's not the best environment, or again, newly planted trees as dry as it's been have been under stress, and this just adds to it. So the added stress of mimosa webworms with heavy infestations could actually push some of those trees over the edge. Now, research has revealed there are distinct differences in terms of host suitability among some of the thornless honey locust. A paper that came out in 1990 showed females reared on the moraine produced significantly fewer eggs compared to those on the imperial, the shade master, the sunburst, and the skyline. So that's sort of interesting. Moraine honey locust has been around since 1949. It was really the first shade tree to be issued a patent. It remains available in the nursery trade. If we take a look, though, according to a paper that came out in 1986, the environment also plays a key in mimosa webworm population dynamics. Like their namesake host tree, overwintering mimosa webworm pupae have a low temperature sort of Achilles heel. The 2014-15 winter polar vortex, if you remember that, that had a serious impact on the winter survival of mimosa webworm pupae. Now, in 2020, the first season really since we found that polar vortex, that we saw a return of noticeable webworm damage here in the state. Ohioans continue, though, to enjoy highly localized webworm populations, so recovery is really far from complete if you're in those areas. We talk about the three Ps, and the mimosa webworm moth is non-native. This exotic pest has been with us long enough to become targeted by the three Ps, that being predators, parasitoids, and pathogens. And there was a paper that came out in 1987 that reported 9 parasitoids, including both flies and wasps, were recovered from overwintering pupae. A study conducted in Iowa, published in 1990, found the parasitoid rates by the wasps on first-generation mimosa webworm pre-pupae were in a range of 44% to 47% over 3 consecutive years. So what that tells us is those wasps can really help control the population. Now, insecticide applications may be required to protect vulnerable trees. We talked about that, young ones, stressed ones, or otherwise. But topical applications present two challenges. First, the first-generation insecticides like the pyrethroids can kill your bio-allies, those good pests we just talked about with parasitoids, pathogens, and the predators. We don't want to kill the predators. Second is these dense webworm nests make it really hard to get that insecticide to penetrate in and impact the webworm. So best case scenario, we have healthy trees. Second best case scenario is the natural predators take care of them. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.